So welcome back, everyone. My name's Anita Devi, and I'm here today with Dr. Kathy Weston. This is episode 3 of Bounce Back, a series of podcasts we've recorded during lockdown to support parents, families, and those who work with parents and families. Today, we are looking at managing loss and grief, and particularly from the eyes of the children. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you for having me, Anita. And this is a very important topic, isn't it? Because every single day we are hearing about dreadful numbers of people affected and dying from COVID-19. And it feels like there must be behind every number a whole community grieving, a family grieving, children grieving. It's really quite overwhelming to think about.
Absolutely. This has been on a scale that we've never experienced before. And some of the conversations I'm having with my colleagues is that I think by the time we get back to some sort of new normal, there won't be a person who hasn't got someone in their network who has been affected by COVID-19. So I think, you know, talking about grief and understanding it from the eyes of the children is really going to be critical for us to support them and help them through it to move forward.
There's an opportunity, you know, in normal times, if you like, we know that every 22 minutes, a parent of a dependent child will die in the UK, and that's pre-COVID. And we know that 2% of young people will experience a significant bereavement before the age of 16. So it's very, very important that all of us, even if we haven't been affected by bereavement or our children haven't experienced it yet, that we do the preparatory work, that we do have open and transparent conversations about death and dying as far as possible and in an age-appropriate way.
Absolutely. And one of the things, or your strengths in terms of what you do, is an evidence-based approach to supporting parents and families. So what would be your suggestions around some of this?
So I think that it's very, very important. We know from the research, when you're dealing with children who may be about to experience grief. So potentially there might be people listening and they know a family member is in intensive care. They may know, or their family member may be in a hospice. They may know the outlook is not particularly good. And the main thing the research suggests is that openness is key. When children ask questions, they must always be answered in an age-appropriate way. So it's very important that we respect, as difficult it is, children's little questions about big things. And children will ask all sorts of very strange and odd questions. Some of them may even seem inappropriate, but it's very important that we model a kind of a gentle openness and calm when we're talking about death or bereavement with children.
Absolutely. And these questions, if you look at the root of those questions, it is from a place of, I'm trying to make sense of this. That's what they're really saying when they ask these questions. You know, I see all these things around me. I am hearing all these things, but these things don't add up for me. So I need to ask these questions to try and make those links.
That's right. And very, very, I know it's quite a detailed point, but there is a lot of research on managing funerals with children. For example, it's important that children have some agency in the process. So it might be very intuitive, for example, for parents to keep children away from that kind of experience, but that really won't help. So a lot of their tips in the research point to letting children visit a venue beforehand, describing to them what they will see, what will happen, answering all their questions. It might be that, you know, who looks after the children on a day like that that's very difficult is important. Also, we know that children, they might feel, I've been to funerals where children seem a bit giddy, you know, they're not grieving in a way that you might imagine an adult to grieve. And we have to have a very big range of acceptance for the way in which children respond to sadness and loss. So it's a very long-term thing. It's not something that's going to happen over a few days. And as you've pointed out, you know, teachers are going to be picking up a lot of the burden of supporting children who may return to school. And over time, they might express, you know, sadness, or they might mention something to their friends. And so it's something that all of us have a sort of a community, a need for all of us to care about any child who's bereaved or grieving. We all have a responsibility because we might be the person that they open up to.
Absolutely. And, you know, as you were speaking, I was thinking particularly of children who have, say, speech and language communication needs. So they don't have necessarily the voice to say how they're feeling, but they are still feeling inside. And the more we can think of ways and strategies to support them to express that pain, even though they don't have a voice, is really key. I think it's particularly hard at this time, though, because due to lockdown, many families, many communities haven't had the opportunity to say farewell when someone has passed away. And that is a big part of the grieving process, to have that opportunity to say farewell and to acknowledge that this has happened and that they are, you know, that there is a new season in their life where this person won't be part of that.
That's right. So the other day we attended a virtual funeral with my children, and it was a whole new experience, and we were trying to be very respectful and quiet while we were listening to it. And then you have your own rituals that accompany that. So you might spend time in reflection or do something meaningful. Children will always want to try and do something, draw a picture, write a story, plant a tree. It doesn't matter what it is. There has to be some sort of physical element to that. So I think that where we are in a time of virtual funerals, it will require a different approach. However, some of the things that parents have asked me about, if a child is grieving following the death of a loved one at the moment, should they go back to school? The evidence suggests that, subject to everything else being okay and parents wanting them to, that they should. I think it's important that everyone knows children do not get over things quickly. And they may not all behave in the same way following a bereavement. And there won't be any predictable patterns for grief among any of us. So it's very important, if you are aware of a child who's grieving, that you exhibit great patience. Don't expect children to comfort adults. And I also think that children are absolutely amazingly resilient and realistic. They don't like secrets. They don't like to be kept in the dark. So I think my main message about talking about death or loss of bereavement is to always be honest and kind and age appropriate in your responses.
Yes, I agree with you. And I think earlier I used the phrase moving forward. I don't think any of us, whether we're adults or children, ever get over losing someone. But what we do is learn to move forward with them having contributed and shaped a part of our lives, because we don't lose the part that they've shaped or influenced. And I wanted to share actually a beautiful story that happened here in Milton Keynes. So an elderly gentleman living in a small community like a street had lost his wife due to COVID-19. This was quite early on. And the neighbourhood all got together and decided that they would print hearts. So as the funeral procession went off, because they couldn't attend the funeral and they just wanted to stand by him. So as the funeral procession moved off, they all stood outside their houses holding up these hearts as he went off to the funeral service. And yeah, it just brings, you know, even now when I just think about it, it brings such tears to my eyes, because for him, he just felt, my community is with me. And for those families, the children included, it was something they could do to acknowledge we've lost someone from our street.
And look how innovative people are. That's the thing. We're all massively innovative. We're resilient and we need each other. And one of the great outcomes of this experience is that we understand how important community is to us.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And we're seeing more and more of these situations where people have lost loved ones, talking about how we celebrate life, how we celebrate the contribution they've made. So I know particularly also some families have created memory boxes of individuals, things that have really mattered to that individual, or special memories that they have with that individual. And again, these have just been there as reassurances and security, so that any time any child feels, you know, the child feels a bit, I'm really missing. I think you described in one of our earlier podcasts around jumping in and out of puddles with the grief. And sometimes you just need to sit with this box when you're in that puddle and just kind of reflect and remember and take time to celebrate the good times.
That's right. And what you're referring to is modeling grief as well. So, for example, I mentioned earlier that my best friend died in 2017, and I was extremely careful to model what that grief looked like to my children. I wanted to teach them as a sort of a inoculization, you know, for the future, what grieving looks like and feels like. So, for example, when I was in the car and occasionally very raw after that event, I would purposely, I wouldn't hold back my tears. I'd have a good sob, but then I'd mm-hmm. and they'd say, "Mommy, why are you crying?" And I'd say, "Because I really, really miss my friend, but I'm going to be okay in a minute." So I was teaching them that there is a rhythm again to grief, and it is normal to cry when you are sad and you are grieving. But then Mommy will bounce out of the car, make the tea, so that they can understand that it's normal to jump in and out of those puddles. And when it's their turn to grieve, they will know that that is normal, if you like, and they will be afraid to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think one of the things we do often as teachers to support this process in schools, which I think parents and carers can also use, is the power of narrative and the power of stories. So there are a number of stories out there that actually model or share or show how others have walked through grief. And that too can help children understand it's not an experience that it's exclusive to them. Other people are feeling this too. Other people have experienced this too and have dealt with it in a variety of ways, because there is, as you said earlier, there's no one way of dealing with grief.
That's right. It's desperately important storytelling, terribly important. And children want to hear stories about the person who's died, and they want to hear happy stories, and they want to have happy memories. And children of all ages love the repetition of stories, and that's because it has a psychological impact on them, and it is a making sense process. The other thing that both of us seem to be saying quite a lot across the podcast, which is very important, is don't be afraid to have an allocated time to grieve. 10 minutes a day, I might think about Sally, my friend who died, or I might say to my children, "We're gonna, you know, if it's okay to have an allocated worry time, an allocated time where we are amazed, have lots of happy memories to share about the person who's died." So what we're both referring to is that these children need to make sense. We all need to make sense of what happens to us that is challenging, but there is a process that we can enable within family life.
Yes, and very much with schools going back and thinking about the curriculum and the timetable day and the structure of the day, I think it's going to be important to anchor whatever is learning processes are going on in school around the emotional development of children, around the social connections that they form once they're back in school, and just giving them that space, that regular space, as you say, is part of the routine for them to continue expressing how they're feeling.
The other thing, the other point that I'd really like to make is if you are supporting a grieving child or grieving yourself or a teacher of a child who is bereaved, there is a ton of help and support out there. So, for example, Child Bereavement UK has its own YouTube channel where teachers can pick up videos on supporting children through this. There's a helpline attached to Child Bereavement UK. They offer monthly phone chats to parents and carers, you know, with the same bereavement support practitioner every time. So there's a ton of help out there, but that's one of the main kind of charities that are certainly doing a lot of work in this area.
It's a huge topic, managing loss and grief, and we've had less than 15 minutes to discuss this, but I hope what we've done in this time is raised some of the issues that need to be considered when looking at grief from the eyes of children, to think about routines and how we approach this, how we give them that space to feel that they can express how they feel, but also that sense of agency of being involved. And I think one of the points you raised from quite early on about being open and being honest with children and allowing them to know, obviously age appropriately, what is going on and what has really happened, rather than just keeping it all hidden because they're children, we can't, actually they need to be part of that. So I hope that, you know, this has been useful to our listeners. We'll be back with episode 4, where we look at how do we feel in control when there are so many unknowns. Kathy, did you want to add a last word?
I just wanted to say that, again, a great theme of our podcast is family communication really matters and how we speak to each other in these conversations. There's so much power in family talk.
So let's keep talking, folks. Thank you.